Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. It is Monday morning, March the 14th, 2022. And because it's Monday morning, that means a discussion with Jimmy Sexton of the Esquire Group, who is based in Dubai, as we continue working our way through the great book. And by that, I mean Charles Adams' For Good and Evil, which has 27 great tacks in both life and therefore lessons on the rise and fall of civilizations. And this week we are going to talk about lesson 14. Actually, it's lesson 15. Lesson 15, which actually seems to me to be not so much a lesson, but a reaffirmation of what is probably a self-evident truth, which reads as follows: as taxes increase, evasion increases. Now, usually there are more words, perhaps multiple sentences in his lessons, but this one is remarkably short. As taxes increase, evasion increases. And Jimmy, is that also remarkably accurate in your view?
I think it's accurate.
Okay. So, I mean, if we take that apart a little bit, I don't think we need to go through a lot of history that, you know, as taxes go up, you know, they become more visible, they become more inconvenient, and people start looking for ways to not pay them, I guess, right?
Well, that's for sure.
And some of this would be, I mean, I think I'd probably start with avoidance. I mean, it seems to me that evasion is not the same thing as avoidance at all, but something that, you know, that if it becomes impossible to comply, perhaps it would lead to that. But what do you think? I mean, first of all, I think that both you and I agree that the best tax systems are the least visible tax systems. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. The ones with the lightest touch and that are easy to comply with and reasonable in terms of how you comply and also the amount you're required to pay.
And they don't require a lot of opportunities to kind of think about them along the way. I mean, you know, it seems to me the difference is that if you have a good tax system, it's like driving, you know, a 1,000-mile highway without a lot of stops, and you don't think about, you know, who put the highway together. But with a lot of these, the way taxation's evolved, and certainly Canada, the United States, a lot of these Western democracies, they're more like toll roads, aren't they?
Yeah.
And tolls are certainly visible. You know, there's always some conductor there stopping, stop, got to pay a toll, got to pay a tax. And that, I think, is really the starting point, right? I suppose it's partly taxes increasing, but I would add to that, you know, as the visibility of taxation increases.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would agree. I mean, I think nobody likes to have their money taken from them or to have to pay taxes. And I think that as they become more visible, people become more offended by them. And less willing to comply with them. You know, I had lunch with a friend today, and we were kind of talking about, you know, how it is to not have taxes in you know, the UAE and what it's like, you know, when you live in other countries that do have taxes. And, you know, one of the things that we were talking about is that in reality, sometimes the cheapest thing to do is actually to pay the tax. But I've actually, you know, we've actually both seen, my friend that I was talking to, not people who were willing to spend more to avoid the tax than the tax itself would have been because they're just so offended by it.
Well, that must be a really, really, really offensive tax if that's the case. I mean, could you share an example of what that might be? I mean, you know, talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face.
No, I mean, look, I think there's been certain circumstances where, you know, people have wanted to set up a structure I mean, a very simple example is if you look at the U.S.'s S corporation regime, right, where you can avoid self-employment tax on the profit distribution or the profit portion of it. You know, a lot of times to set up the whole system in order to avoid that self-employment tax, by the time you factor in, then now you have to file a tax return for this S corporation, that you need to file the employment tax returns, that you have to pay employment taxes, you have to pay unemployment taxes, you have to have workman's comp insurance and all this other stuff that goes into it. A lot of times it becomes more costly to save those self-employment taxes than it would have been to just pay the self-employment taxes and actually get a little bit of benefit because you're paying into Social Security and Medicare. But people just don't want to do it, right? I've actually seen people say, no, I'd rather give the money to you to prepare the tax returns so that you can profit from that than it going to the government.
Yeah. Well, there is no question that there is a huge bureaucracy compliance cost with a lot of these steps that people will take. You know, particularly, I see so much of this in, you know, the world I live in. You know, people wanting to set up corporations, right? You know, for, you know, and I look at them and I say, you know, unless there's a massive, and it doesn't matter whether, you know, it's a U.S. or a Canadian or what, regardless of their citizenship, you know, I say to them, you know, you are picking up a massive, massive piece of bureaucracy and annual filing obligation, not, you know, and the cost of preparing this stuff. I mean, it really seems to me there's got to be a benefit that far exceeds that, you know, far exceeds whatever it is you're trying to do to get into that. And I would add also that having in the last year or so thought a lot more about the role of Social Security and that, I think people should not be reflexively trying to avoid paying into Social Security.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. But I think it just goes right back to your point, which is, you know, when we look at this lesson 15 as taxes increase, evasion increases, that it's not just evasion, it's avoidance, right? And sometimes not even at a net savings.
Yeah. Well, I think that for most evasion, you know, and you and I don't see this because, you know, people who evade tend to not consult professionals. But my impression of the evasion thing is that it starts with avoidance. And when all the legitimate avoidance opportunities run out, coupled with extraordinary unfairness, you know, that's where I think it often begins, doesn't it?
Well, I would agree, but I would go even a step further in saying that, you know, and this kind of goes a little bit to the tax the rich thing where, you know, governments around the world are saying that, you know, these wealthy people are rampantly evading taxes. And that's simply not true, right? The evasion is at the lower wealth levels, right? Because if you take a wealthy taxpayer, first of all, the transactions that this person is doing are all running through bank accounts, right? You can't do nobody's doing million-dollar transactions in a paper bag, right? I mean, it's running through bank accounts. It's going through the financial system, which can easily be checked by governments and the tax authorities. And most of the wealthy people that are engaging in this are intelligent people. They know that their transactions are easily discoverable. And so they don't evade tax. They avoid tax to the maximum amount permissible by law by paying guys like me to figure out how to reduce their taxes. But the out and out evasion is at the small business level, right? It's the guys that are deducting business expense, personal expenses and disguising them as business expenses. They're the guys that are not reporting cash. They're the people that are bartering. They're the people that are dealing with sort of, you know, more cash and stuff in society and have the opportunities to evade. Wealthy people don't really have the opportunity, and they're, most of them are not going to just blatantly not comply, right? They may take an aggressive tax position, but they're just going to not blatantly evade taxes in most cases. I think we see that at the you know, sort of a poor man's game, I would say.
I think that's absolutely right. To put it another way, I don't think that if you're running a business with a bunch of employees and you're not actually doing the work, right? But your work is running the business. I mean, how do you evade tax in a situation like that, right?
I think it depends, right? And this is why I go back to the small businesses, right? I remember years ago when I was still defending people who were in trouble with the IRS, I had a lady come in who was being audited. She owned a restaurant. And the reason she was being audited is there was zero cash deposits. Everything that went into the bank was checks and credit cards.
That's a pretty good red flag, isn't it?
Yeah. And so, I think when I say small businesses, things like this, when you look at, you know, small service providers, you know, you're talking about, you know, gardeners and restaurants and dry cleaners and, you know, places where cash is still prevalent. I think that there's, or especially where bartering becomes an option, I think there's massive evasion.
Well, you're probably most likely to see it on a scale of, you know, the self-employed handyman, plumber, electrician, you know, this sort of stuff, right?
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, look, I think once you get to a certain size, have systems and processes and everything in place that.
I think it's once you start having layers of accountability. You know, then, I mean, I would have to think it gets a lot harder.
For sure.
But clearly, you know, I think the general point that's being made here is that the rate of taxation, the perception of fairness of taxation, clearly impacts taxpayer behavior. Agreed?
Certainly. I mean, people are protesting by avoiding and evading, right? It's their way of saying they don't approve of this taxation, but they don't consent to this taxation.
No, they don't consent. I think it was the great economist, I think it was the late Milton Friedman, who made the point in some of his writings that it doesn't matter what the tax rates are, the government's only going to collect a certain amount anyway. And, you know, and I think that tells you a great deal. It seems to me that a huge determinant of, I'm going to call it evasion, I'm not even going to call it an avoidance, but what I would call it is an unhealthy obsession with taxation. You know, because I think that these tax systems need to be, you know, as invisible as possible, right? Is a perception of just basic unfairness, you know, where you have different people taxed differently for different reasons, you know, and that sort of stuff that just, you know, it's clearly the result of political favors, that sort of thing.
Well, and I mean, and look, and I mean, not just that, but I mean, if you just think about the amount of time, effort, and resources the average person in the Western world needs to devote to, one, being aware of the tax consequences of their actions, and then, you know, the difficulty in actually the logistics of paying the tax and complying with the different tax codes, it's a considerable amount of time, money, and in order to do so.
Oh, there's absolutely no question about that. And that in itself is a gigantic problem. I mean, the more I think about this, the more I live it, you know, as I think I've said before, my personal definition of wealth is now, you know, basically being able to live on very small amounts of money and be happy, right? Because the more you have, the more money you have, you know, the more interaction you have with these tax systems. I did an interesting discussion with a guy a day or two ago who was talking about retirement planning. And he was specifically focusing on the Roth IRA, which, you know, as you know, is a, you invest with after tax money, and that's the end of the matter, right, as far as the tax system goes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, although this is so obviously true that I guess that I never really thought about this aspect of it. I mean, the real beauty of the Roth is that, you know, there's no tax aspects to it, right? I mean, you know, you've got it, that's it, it grows, you know, you take it out. There's not, you know, I mean, you don't have to report that stuff as a distribution, do you?
I think you do. I have to say I'm not a retirement account expert.
No, I'm not either. But I mean, the whole idea of it, right? I mean, the one point the guy was making that, again, I hadn't thought about this before. This is why, by the way, for people who are listening, I think it's always good to get advice from people who actually focus on what your problem is, right?
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, a point that he was making is he was actually talking about this in conjunction with Social Security. And how, again, I'm not an expert on this either, but I can easily see how as income goes up, right, Social Security becomes taxable, et cetera. And one of his points was that the distributions from the IRA, Roth IRA, because they're not taxable, right, keep you out of the tax penalty that you might have with Social Security. Well, that is interesting, isn't it? I mean, I haven't, like, you know, I sort of absorbed it and thought, you know, good thought. I mean, I haven't investigated it, but assuming that's true, that is, you know, I think a double benefit from that, right?
Yep.
That's that keeps bureaucracy costs of this down.
So, you know, I want to go back a little bit to our lesson for a minute of the as taxes increase, evasion increases, and talk about, because I think this is kind of an interesting point that you were making before, that you also included avoidance in there, right? Which I completely agree with. But now you notice, if you notice, the governments are trying to muddy the waters and make avoidance synonymous with evasion, right? I mean, now when you read a lot of the articles, you know, they always refer to avoidance and evasion as if they're the same thing, and especially within the you know, global framework of the MLI. You know, they start talking about aggressive tax planning, you know, and this is a big key word, especially within the EU with their DAC6 initiative, right? That they've kind of tried to create this middle ground between avoidance and evasion that's aggressive tax planning. And while it's not criminal, you know, necessarily you're subject to all these penalties. So they're definitely trying to make legal behavior illegal, right? They're trying to not only make avoidance sound like evasion, but they're trying to push more and more of legal, what's today legal avoidance, into the realm through aggressive tax planning, into the realm of evasion, to encompass, you know, more behavior.
Yeah, well, I think you see this, you see this in the you know, the OECD stuff. I think we've talked about this independently, but where you also see this are these general anti-tax avoidance provisions and income tax acts of certain countries. I mean, Canada has this, Canada Revenue Agency can decide that, this thing that you did, although technically legal, was against the spirit of, you know, having to pay taxes. So we're going to make you pay the taxes anyway. A troubling development, I think, a very troubling development. I mean, the DAC6 stuff that you're talking about is troubling in another way, and that is that it basically enlists lawyers, accountants, tax preparers, you know, anybody who's anything to do with the transaction as, part of the regulatory apparatus to report on people. And I remember while this was a little more topical, that you had written an article, or you were interviewed for Law 360 or something, and you and I had some back and forth on this. And the conclusion that I drew from the thing was that it probably would force legal work out of the UK and Europe and into North America.
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting, and this is what I've found in most of the European Union. So lawyers can basically claim an exemption from having to report because of the attorney-client privilege. And because of the legal privilege, it throws the reporting responsibility back on to the client, right? Now, what's so ridiculous here, when you want to talk about, you know, this absurd compliance culture that has no impact, that really, at the end, just creates more work without having any positive impact. So in most EU countries, when you engage an attorney for a transaction, they will send you a DAC6 questionnaire asking a series of questions to try to identify if this is something that would be reportable under DAC6. Now, no matter what you answer on this thing, the law firm is going to take the position that they're exempt under attorney-client privilege, and therefore it's your responsibility. So the whole DAC6 things in terms of law firms is a completely senseless filling out of this form that nobody does anything with.
Yeah. Well, it's senseless on a macro level. On a micro level, it provides the law firm, you know, with assurance that they're, you know, aware of the law and, you know, doing their best to sort of play their role in it. That's right. Whether they take the attorney-client privilege thing or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I definitely think it is a consideration where, you know, the DAC 6, I mean, when the opportunity arises, you know, you definitely see people within the EU, you know, if they're aware enough and astute enough, they definitely try to seek their advice from outside the EU.
Yeah. Well, probably they all should. Actually, at this point, you know, as long as this thing is going on, because what it's doing is, you know, basically making it impossible for you know, people to get advisors who aren't, you know, part of the compliance network, right? And yep. You know, I don't think that any of this has any effect on people who are starting out with criminal intention. You know, but what it does have a huge effect on us, the people who are just trying to do their best and, you know, are sort of, you know, mid or lower level people who don't know what to do.
For sure.
But, you know, on the lesson, as tax increase evasion, I really don't have a sense there's an awful lot of evasion going. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, hopelessly wrong, but I that's not a sense I really have.
I would agree with you. Like I said, I think that there is some large scale evasion, and when I say large scale, I mean in the amount of people engaged in it rather than necessarily the monetary value. But I would say with small business, self-employed people, I do think that there is a lot of tax evasion going on. I think there's a lot of people.
Oh, sure. Greater potential because there are fewer levels of hierarchy in the thing.
For sure. But once you get into a business that have, as you say, some levels of accountability, and once you get into high income, high net worth individuals, I don't think there's much evasion going on. I think it's a very small amount.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, even in Canada, are you aware, Jimmy? I don't know if I've ever said this to you, but are you aware that personal income tax rates in Canada are over 50%?
I was not aware.
Certain people. I mean, let me sink in for a minute, okay? I mean, don't you think that has reached the point where, you know, and then we've got the goods and services tax, 13%, and then God knows any number of user fees that are actual taxes. But if somebody just said that to you out of the blue, we're going to run a country and we're going to have a tax rate of 50% and we're going to have a 13%, you know, and this and that. I mean,
I would say I'm never going to this country.
Sustainable.
Yeah, I would never go to this country.
Well, you know, this is an interesting thing. If you look though at the you know, there's huge demand to immigrate to Canada. It's huge.
But
they don't know anything about the taxes. Let me give you an example. I got a note from somebody this week who had recently immigrated to Canada and was a permanent resident. And, you know, had a certain income source in the country that he was coming from that had not been subject to tax, but was now, of course, taxable in Canada. And, you know, he went through this and he said, well, you know, I there's no way I can even pay my bills if I have to pay the tax on this, right? People do not research how their assets would anybody, my position is that anybody who wants to move to another country and retain assets better get some good tax counseling on how those assets are going to be taxed. I mean, it can be as simple as just doing a mock income tax return, for God's sake, you know?
For sure. You know, I remember back when the whole EB-5 thing started in the U.S., there was a massive influx of Chinese and Indian immigrants under the EB-5 program coming into the U.S., but nobody told them what it meant to be a U.S. taxpayer, right? And
I can't tell you
how many people, you know, got their green card, spent all the money to get it, and then were told what they had to do to comply, and they were like, forget it, you can have the green card back, I'm out of here.
Well, or they found out later, but there's no question that there's something about the legal profession where it's gotten so compartmentalized, right? That I do not believe that immigration lawyers, I think they really do not know anything about this, right? And, you know, tax lawyers know nothing about the immigration. And it's reached the point where I think that immigration lawyers need to be required to pass a basic tax exam, you know, or I think that there, you know, there's, you know, any of this, well, can I get a green card or can I get permanent residency in Canada? Any discussion of this type of stuff without a question, well, are you going to retain assets where you are? Okay, you know, et cetera, is probably professional negligence. What do you think?
Well, I mean, look, I think that they at least need to raise the issue and say, listen, if I'm going to assist you with this immigration matter, you need to have tax advice on this, or you need to specifically waive that you're getting tax advice because there could be tax consequences, right? So I don't know if I would go so far as to say that they need to you know, educate themselves in tax and pass some sort of an exam, but I do think that they need to raise the issue and get somebody to you know, sign a waiver that, listen, I'm not going to get tax advice, or you need to get somebody that provides an opinion.
Well, I think this might be interesting. So I'm going to pretend that I'm considering getting a green card, and you're going to be my advisor, okay? So, and let's do a demonstration of how we think the conversation should go. Say, hi, my name's John. You know, I've lived my whole life in the UK. I've always wanted to move to America, and I'm pretty sure I want to live there permanently. And I want to get a green card. And you know, really for me, it's going to be a retirement thing. I'm going to keep all my assets in the UK. You know, and that includes, you know, I'm running this business through a corporation in the UK, and you know, et cetera. Will you help me get this green card?
Am I an immigration attorney now?
Yeah. Well, you're a responsible advisor.
Well, I think as a responsible non-tax advisor, I would say, listen, have you gotten tax advice on this matter? Because becoming a U.S. green card holder, a U.S. permanent resident, makes a U.S. person for income tax purposes, and that has consequences.
Would you want to add? You know, it's not so much getting a new life as it is life ending.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, look, I mean, this is something that I see. I mean, this is something that I deal with, not necessarily on the immigration side of it, but on other matters so much on a regular basis is, you know, whenever I take a multi-jurisdictional project on, right? I mean, whether it is setting up a structure for a client, or a client moving jurisdictions, changing the residency. I mean, we go through, we get opinions on every issue in every jurisdiction, right, that's involved. And I mean, that is just something that is required to really give good advice these days. You can't do it as a solo person if you're doing it on a multi-jurisdictional level. You have to go out and get opinions from all the relevant advisors in all the relevant jurisdictions, and then kind of take all that information together and filter out so that you can go to the client and be like, okay, here's the consequences of doing this, and here's how we think we can optimize it for you, or that we can't optimize it for you, right?
It's almost as though you need a committee.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, I tell a lot of clients what I do is, you know, at this point, like I quarterback, right? I come up with the high level strategy. I engage different advisors in the different countries to try to figure out the most optimal way of carrying out a transaction. And then we, you know, get the client's approval on that and get all the opinions on it, and only then execute the transaction. And one of the things that I would add that I am seeing throughout Europe, and actually even here in Dubai, you know, you can't even go to a reputable corporate service provider here in the UAE to set up a company without written tax advice.
What do you mean you can't?
You know, so if you come as, let's say, a German, and you come to the UAE and you want to set up a company here in Dubai, to run some business through, the corporate service provider is going to ask you, do you have a tax opinion on this? Do you have tax advice on this about how this is going to impact you at home? And if you don't, no reputable corporate service provider is going to set up that company for you.
Yeah, sort of a precautionary thing. You know, I wonder, when I look at going back to the Adams book, right? So he's writing this in the early 90s. Certainly the last 30 years, all the information exchange and everything, I think has made it hard to evade taxes.
For sure.
Bring this to an end today. Do you think that in the early 90s, you know, before all, you know, when it was just a different world, do you think it was easier to evade taxes?
Oh, I think for sure.
Yeah, I think that's probably true as well. Well, so it's interesting. Instead of focusing on evasion and avoidance, though, I think it's reached the point where people need to focus for on a lower level, just trying to understand what the issues are that may impact them.
Absolutely. You
know, which is bad enough. All right, well, this has been great. I should probably call this one for today. I mean, this is actually the first, I think, of the Adams lessons that, although still true, probably is less relevant today than when he wrote the book, do you think?
I would agree with that statement.
Yeah, interesting stuff. All right, and how do people get a hold of you for your immigration advice, tax advice, or life advice?
www.esquiregroup.com or email us at info@esquiregroup.com.
All right, that's great. Great to speak with you again this week, and looking forward to next week. Thanks, Jimmy.
Always a pleasure.